And this is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and myself, Mimi Rosenberg.
Later on, Seattle Uber drivers given right to unionize. But first...
So of course you recognize that as Bob James, the theme from Taxi, and I never can think of a better way to introduce one of our very favorite guests, one of the real champions of the working class, Beta V. Desai, who is with the New York Taxi Workers Alliance. In fact, she is the executive director. Well, a New York State administrative law judge upheld that Uber was the employer of former drivers, all members of the New York Taxi Workers Alliance, who won unemployment insurance claims in New York State. This ruling sets the stage for other lawsuits in cases involving Uber's assertion that its drivers are independent contractors. Real critical issue we're going to find out more about. This comes close after a massive wage theft lawsuit filed by the New York Taxi Workers Alliance against Uber and massive driver resistance to Uber imposed fare cuts.
Uber's race to the bottom extends to all taxi workers by flooding the streets with drivers so that making a living entails countless hours on the road. But Uber's race to the bottom also extends to its business model, which many observers contend is not sustainable in light of its continuing financial losses. And now Uber CEO Travis Kalanick was forced to resign by its investors in a scandal exposing a workplace culture of sexual harassment at Uber.
Well, Beta V. Desai, I want to start by kind of a fear. I wouldn't say cynicism on my part, but a fear, and then we can transit into Uber. The ability of the taxi industry to survive, the question of the loss of worth of medallions, and the other problems that are plaguing our brothers primarily and some sister taxi workers. Thanks for being with us, and let's start by the prospects, really, for the future of the taxi industry.
Great. Thank you so much. So good to be back on the air with you both, Ken and Mimi. It's a race to the bottom, you know, as Ken was just saying. That's the business model of whether it's Uber or Lyft or Get or Via, any of these companies that are looking to dispatch fares for hire to drivers, they operate, you know, their Silicon Valley business model is predicated on turning what has been a full-time profession into part-time supplementary temporary gig work. And so that means that for drivers who are owner drivers who've invested in their medallion, many of them will spend 15, 20, 25 years of, you know, working 6 days a week, 10 to 12 hours each day in order to make up those payments. And, you know, and they invest into the medallion hoping for a retirement because there is no other retirement plan. And now they're just amassing massive debt. They're going from six shifts to seven shifts, from 10 hours to 12 hours. We've seen drivers who are in their 70s and some, you know, even in their early 80s who are coming back into driving in order to keep up with their payments. They're not able to lease those medallions out anymore. So it's heartbreaking. It's pretty devastating. It's unconscionable that all of this has happened because we've had a multinational, you know, Wall Street baby that's used investor money to supplement its low fares to attract drivers with bonuses. When the bonus periods end, the drivers are left below minimum wage. And so it's a race to the bottom because, you know, Uber starves the Uber driver so it can starve the yellow cab driver. No driver wins in a race to the bottom.
Well, the Uber model, two component points, maybe there are more, are the app itself, instead of going out and hailing a cab or calling for one, and calling the workers independent contractors and treating them as that rather than employees. Mm-hmm. And it seems as if you're making some breakthroughs with regard to the idea of that they are employees.
And where does the app fit in?
Well, I think it's really important that we separate the technology from the business model, right? The technology itself can be agnostic. You know, it's all about who uses it and toward what purpose. And the problem, the fundamental problem here is the economic philosophy, which says that the Wall Street money can be maximized at the expense of the workers, at the expense of consumer rights, at the expense with, you know, people with disabilities who seek access, you know, equal access to service in this private sector. So the business model, as far as labor is concerned, Uber exerts more control over drivers than we've seen in this industry in 30 plus years. Yet they want to claim that the drivers are not their employees, but instead they're independent contractors. And, you know, we've made that deal with the devil in our economy and within the framework of our labor law in this country that says that when a corporation exerts control and really determines the economic destiny of the workers, then in return, it has to recognize the workers as employees and grant them minimum wage, overtime, Social Security contribution, the right to collective bargaining and democratic union, you know, the right to unemployment, you know, ACA, the Affordable Care Act, the right to, you know, employer-sponsored health care. So all of these basic rights, when workers are defined or classified as independent contractors, all these basic rights are stolen from them. And then in return, though, the workers are supposed to have some level of economic independence. Well, this is a business model that does not grant that independence. And, you know, Mimi, you know that in the taxi industry, 30, 40 years ago, when the drivers were under a commission system and were being dispatched and the companies called the shots in the everyday economic terms, you know, deciding the rate of fare, all those things, the workers, the drivers were defined, were classified as employees, mm-hmm. and they had basic mm-hmm. protections under the law. 30 years later, we have these Wall Street finance companies that want to go back to the same levels of control, but meanwhile, they want to keep the model of independent contractorship, and it doesn't work that way. And we're so pleased that not only did the State Department of Labor rule on the side of the workers, but also an administrative law judge at the Department of Labor, after a 6-part hearing and a 1,000-page transcript, a very lengthy process, upheld the agency's determination and also found that indeed the three Uber members were in fact employees entitled to unemployment insurance, and other similarly situated Uber drivers would be entitled to the same rights.
Well, this is so important because the move, the shift within our society to precarity, to making sure that workers are, whether they're labeled as independent contractors, whether they're constantly in temp or adjunct positions, do not have those assured rights, is an essential and critical issue for the working class. So I want you to just continue to talk about how important this victory that you just won is, and again, the significance of people not being labeled as independent contractors for those broad issues that you have always concerned yourself about, which is the benefit of the working class.
Well, you know, we say all the time, if you want to know why employee status matters to workers, ask an independent contractor. Now, ask the yellow cab driver who's, you know, where the structure of the industry was changed 30 years ago, went from employees to independent contractors, don't have unemployment to fall back on, don't have, you know, minimum wage and overtime laws to fall back on, you know, paid family leave, all the basic rights that generations of workers have fought for, have died for, and, you know, have struggled to sustain. But there's one other point, though, I want to make here, which is, you know, with companies like Uber and Lyft, the other thing we don't have are industry regulations. You know, for 21 years, the Taxi Workers Alliance has organized. We know that yellow cab drivers have been found to be independent contractors because of the structure of the industry. But we have fought so hard to establish a floor through industry regulations, a cap on the leases that the companies can charge, you know, a fair rate on the metered fare, which is what yields drivers' incomes. And see, companies like Uber, not only are they looking to evade labor law, but they're also looking to evade industry regulation. And so there is no floor for the workers. And when that, you know, when it keeps bottoming out, it means they can keep lowering the fare on the backs of the drivers. And because the drivers are on contracts with this predatory leasing on the vehicles, they have less options to be able to leave and get another job. You know, and this has been a profession. This is a dignified profession. For tens of thousands of workers, 94% are immigrant. We are a largely Muslim and Sikh and, you know, immigrant workforce. And, you know, this is a job that serves a million people every single day. It's one of the biggest sectors in this city. We want to see labor laws upheld. We want to see industry regulations upheld. And, you know, 30 years ago, you know, the economy, the capitalist class went after taxi drivers who are left vulnerable. And 30 years later, we see, you know, one-third of the American workforce in precarious work. We are again on the front lines of an economic shift. But I assure you, we are not going to lose this fight. We're going to give it everything that we have because It does have tremendous implications for the working class as a whole. It has implications for an entire generation of workers that these companies are looking to replace with automation. And so we understand that we have a historic fight in front of us, but, you know, we've been fighting the good fight with the grassroots unionism, not doing what some others in the labor movement are doing, you know, where they've entered into the machinists have entered into a private agreement with Uber, you know, taking money from Uber and agreeing not to challenge Uber's labor violations in court or, you know, even at the National Labor Relations Board. So we're up against some pretty powerful forces, but, you know, we're ready for it and we're winning. We're beginning to win and the tide is beginning to shift.
We only have about a minute and a half left, but I want to ask you whether there is something that the Taxi and Limousine Commission could do to, like, pick out something off the top of your head that's the most important thing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first of all, regulating the minimum fare so the companies can't keep dropping out the bottom, regulating the cap on the number of vehicles so the streets don't get saturated in the race to the bottom. You know, upholding our federal lawsuits, which are calling for an end to the massive wage theft in this sector, where the TLC can also pass regulation to end that wage theft and also act in it as an enforcement arm against it.
And you did that perfectly, so we're just going to punctuate that. So we have the CEO, Travis Kalanick, who was forced to resign. What do we say finally about Uber and that juxtaposed as to saving the taxi industry?
We have a unity platform. What is fundamentally at stake here is our profession. It's not about any one sector. In order for the yellow taxi cab driver to survive in New York City, they need to lock arms with the Uber driver because they're all on the same front lines fighting the same fight for economic justice in this industry.
You are my working class heroine. You always have been. And
thank you, Mimi.
Is there just finally any place that we can go to continue to keep abreast on this issue and or immediately to support our brothers and sisters who are part of the New York Taxi Workers Alliance?
Yes, we're on the web, www.nytwa.org. I also just want to quickly just say that, you know, we're We're in solidarity with the thousands of people out there today that are disappointed with the Supreme Court decision on the Muslim travel ban. We are the same union that went out on strike on January 28th at Kennedy Airport in solidarity. And, you know, we're going to continue that fight as well, because we deserve a more, you know, more conscious, a more fair, a more just society, and that includes for our refugee brothers and sisters and our Muslim brothers and sisters across this globe.
Thank you so much, and thank you for adding that. And we have been speaking to Behrabi Desai, who is the executive director of the New York Taxi Workers Alliance, and we have to keep in close touch, and we have to have that intersectionality in what we do. We do workplace organizing and support our brothers and sisters in the working class and understand the implication for their civil liberties and civil rights at this juncture, and treat people holistically. Thanks so much for being with us.
Welcome to the Real News Network. I'm Jessica Devereaux in Baltimore. On Monday, the Seattle City Council was the first U.S. city to vote unanimously to allow Uber and Lyft drivers to form unions. The App-Based Drivers Association, or ABDA, worked with the local Teamsters Union to fight for the legislation, which will allow drivers to negotiate with Uber and Lyft for higher wages. Uber Technologies has butt heads with their drivers in the past for slashing fares at their own discretion and for discouraging union organizing. Joining us to discuss all of this is Leonard Smith. He is the Director of Organizing and Strategic Campaigns for Teamsters Local 117 in Seattle, Washington, and he helped get this bill passed. Thank you so much for joining us, Leonard.
Happy to be here.
So, Leonard, I'd like to start off by asking you how you were able to get this bill passed and get drivers, specifically independent contractors, really organized. A lot of them are part-time. So how did you manage to garner support from them?
Well, they came to us. There's a feeling they have a very strong experience with the transportation network companies, or TNCs. And let me just clarify that the bill that was passed also allows taxi drivers to collectively bargain as well. It's not just Uber and Lyft, it's also taxis. And the app-based drivers came together because Uber changes the terms and conditions of their relationship at will, cutting fares, raising costs, deactivation. And they felt powerless and wanted to have a voice. And while they are called independent contractors, their relationship with Uber and Lyft is anything but that. They're pretty tightly controlled by those companies and how they conduct their business.
Can you be more specific? How are they controlled?
Well, Uber and Lyft pretty much tell them how much they're going to be allowed to charge. They tell them their conditions of employment. They incentivize them to be in certain locations. They deactivate them, which is firing them for no reason, and there's no recourse. And so if you're an independent contractor, you know, Uber doesn't allow them to take tips. And so it seems to me if you're an independent contractor and running your own business, you should be free to work where you want and take tips if you want them. And if the technology is going to deactivate you, you should at least be able to talk to somebody to find out why you've been deactivated. Normally, if a driver gets deactivated and they try and hunt down the reason why, they get canned responses coming from Uber. And in fact, I just read an article the other day that led me to believe that the people that send out those canned responses are also subcontracted out from Uber, but I'm not sure about that part.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit more about how Uber's really kind of captured a lot of enthusiasm in the mass media, everyday people. I mean, I'll be perfectly honest, I have Uber on my phone as well. It's really part of the sharing economy. A lot of people see this as a great way to add more competition into the marketplace. And they say it gives people an opportunity to make some money on the side, especially if you're low income, but you need some work. You know, unemployment is rather high in this company. What do you say to those people that see this bill as potentially being detrimental to Uber because essentially some of the costs, higher wages, for example, would eventually get trickled down and customers would have to be paying the difference?
Well, this bill and these associations are not anti-Uber in any sense of the word. Uber has a great platform, great technology. What this bill does is it gives drivers the flexibility to be able to go ahead and get control over their working lives and have a say in their hours and how much they get paid. And, you know, about costs being passed on, Uber used to cost a lot more money until they started to keep slashing and slashing and slashing. And even when they, here in Seattle, when they were charging a dollar or more per mile, and they've cut that since then, but even when they were charging that higher rate, they were still equally popular. And the drivers tell stories about how their customers are happy with the service, they like the service, and they're happy to pay more. They wouldn't have a problem paying more. So the drivers themselves see the need because drivers, frankly, can't operate. And Seattle has the second highest mileage rate in the country, is my understanding. And the drivers really have difficulty time making ends meet. The way Uber works, the way Uber and Lyft work, and to call it sharing is a little bit difficult. The way they work is Uber provides a technology and the driver takes all the risk in terms of buying the car, paying maintenance, gas, tires, everything else. And we have some drivers who, do this as a full-time. There's a chunk of drivers that do it as a full-time job. And they, after expenses last year, one of our drivers found after 12 and 14-hour days, he was making about $3 an hour.
Wow.
So the promise of making a lot of money through Uber just is not coming true for drivers. Uber is aggressively hiring more drivers, getting more drivers on the street, which is good for consumers, but more cars on the street means more congestion and it means less work for drivers. When drivers ask Uber about this, Uber's response is to say, well, the more cars that are on the road, the more money you're going to make, which is counterintuitive to the people doing the work. They tell us, they don't have still only 12 or 14 hours in their workday. They can only take so many trips. How does more competition on the road make them more money? Mm. So, you know, they just feel that while, you know, nobody's presuming that we're fighting Uber or trying to get rid of Uber or anything else like that. It's just really the workers that make Uber function that provide the transportation because this technology doesn't exist unless there's cars on the road. All they want to do is come together in some of these conditions that they don't have right now.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about what they don't have right now, what they're going to be fighting for, and mm-hmm. How will this union actually be structured if they do decide to unionize?
Well, right now they have an association, and so they have an association that's affiliated with us, and we work together to achieve their goals, and their association has an elected leadership council, and the leadership council sets the policy. And then we help provide the resources and expertise to fulfill the policy goals of the association. What this legislation would do, it would give the right to the union to organize through Teamsters. And then the drivers, if they chose to organize, and we had a majority and they decided this is what they wanted to do, then they could actually sit down and negotiate a collective bargaining agreement or a contract with Uber or Lyft or the taxi companies that would set their wages, their working conditions, maybe add benefits, have a process in place where they could do something about the activation, which is a huge issue for them. Right now, all these things sort of happen at will to the drivers with no say. The activation without a voice, changing the rates without a voice, other requirements for your cars, changing the requirements of the cars without drivers having a voice. And if they had a contract in place, they would be able to at least say, all right, wait a minute, before we do that, let's consider this from our point of view. Let's get our voice in it. And you'd have a binding agreement that would hold both parties to task.
Leonard, how close are you guys to achieving potentially having a union?
Well, right now we have the association, and, you know, it's not a union in the traditional sense, but it functions as a union in that the drivers have come together collectively to get power over their working lives. So that's a definition of a union. As far as the other part, the legislation actually allowing the collective bargaining to take place, it's hard to say because we've got about another 4 or 5 days before the legislation becomes law. There's some rulemaking and some infrastructure the city has to set up to administer the law and enforce it. And there are a lot of rumors floating around out there that Uber and Lyft or perhaps some others may be planning lawsuits to stop or delay the implementation of the law.
Okay. All right. Well, Leonard, please keep us up to speed about what's going on with this story. We'd love to have you back on to give us an update. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.